Our plan is to get equal funding for our kids, and our parents have been working on this for months. It's the 20 for 20 campaign. Our students are 20% of state enrollment, but we get less than 15% of state funding, and the difference is $550 million, enough to save our schools.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:10. Good morning, everyone. It's the June 15th, 2016, and it is Wednesday. Welcome to another business day. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Lots to talk about today. Today is a big day for the Fed. The Federal Reserve ends its 2 days of meeting with an announcement scheduled for about 1 o'clock Chicago time today on whether or not interest rates will go up. Everybody thinks it will not happen during this meeting because of world economic issues, the state of our economy here in the United States, Brexit, all of those things playing into it. We'll see, though. We could always be wrong. There will be interest rates hikes this year. The Federal Reserve has said that, has promised that. But whether it happens at this month's meeting remains to be seen. Probably not. Yesterday, U.S. stocks were on losing ground for a fourth day in a row. That tops our market intel this morning from the WGN Market Desk. Top decliners included financial stocks as the Fed began its meeting yesterday. The Fed Chair Janet Yellen will have a news conference today after the meeting. And FBB Capital Partners analyst Mike Bailey says it's something that analysts and investors will be watching very closely.
We think actually you're unlikely to see a rate hike probably until after the election. Basically, I think the Fed is going to say, okay, if not the summer, as you get closer to the fall, it just gets a little bit dicey in terms of the election coming up.
There was good news yesterday in terms of retail sales. U.S. retail sales rose more than expected in May as Americans bought cars, clothes, they shopped online, and the 1.3% actually was the increase in April. Sales were 2.5% higher than a year ago. James Ingram, CEO of Splashlight, watches all of this stuff, a technology company that analyzes retail sales, and his take on all of it.
One out of every $10 is spent online last year, which is up 15% from 2014. If you're positioned to reach the consumer online and be convenient and price competitively, you're gonna outpace these retailers that are burdened with stores.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says the Senate will consider legislation today to ease Puerto Rico's financial crisis before the U.S. territory's $2 billion payment is due to creditors on July 1st. The House overwhelmingly passed legislation to create a new control board and restructure some of that debt. The House has also voted to bar the Internal Revenue Service from requiring nonprofit groups to list their donors on tax returns, saying the agency has failed to keep that information confidential. There is news today regarding Tribune Media Company. There is a report today that Tribune Media is going to spin off its Grace Notes, or at least put it up for auction almost immediately. Grace Note is one of the subsidiaries of the Tribune Media Company, which is the owner of this radio station, WGN. This morning on The Opening Bell, our guest, Dale Boss, on Twitter, at Dale D. Boss, and he is one of our regular guests on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Dale. Aggressive advertising is your focus.
Yeah. General Motors through Chevrolet really shook up Detroit this, last week with a huge advertising blitz against Ford over the bed of a pickup truck. And that's such a huge and important thing in the auto industry because, as you know, pickup trucks are the most profitable vehicle for any automaker. And they've certainly been hot selling lately. And Ford took a big risk last year for reasons of making the vehicle lighter to put an all-aluminum bed in its F-150. And, of course, you know the F-150 is the best-selling vehicle in the country, has been for decades. So this is a huge, huge cash cow for Ford, their most important vehicle by far. And they took a big risk in putting an aluminum bed, which some people at the time even said, you know, aluminum, maybe not quite as durable, doesn't have that image of toughness that steel does. And Ford said, no, we're going to do this for the long haul. They did it. It has worked. F-150 sales are significantly ahead this year where they were last year. Well, lo and behold, last week, Chevrolet Silverado took out 4-page wraparound ads in the hometown papers, started a TV advertising campaign, started a pre movie showing campaign in cinemas. And basically their point was, with some pretty dramatic videos, the bed of a Ford F-150 is vulnerable to punctures and dents way more than the traditional steel bed of the Silverado. And this set off a huge Donnybrook in Detroit.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 520. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Dale Buss this morning, who's written a piece in Forbes about Chevrolet's big aggressive ad campaign. The folks over at Ford aren't very happy about it. But, Dale, I'm wondering, are we seeing a new chapter? I mean, I know they've done this, we've seen something like this before in the past, as you said in our last segment, but are we opening a new chapter here? Has it become more cutthroat now? Is it going to become more competitive?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. And as you mentioned, comparison advertising is nothing new in the auto business or any other business. But I think what's new here is some of the specifics. I mean, comparison ads have been a big deal for pickups for a long time. You know, you're used to seeing these ads showing how much one truck or another can haul, you know, payloads and that kind of thing. And we've seen that. But what's different and interesting about what Silverado has done is, Ford believes this is kind of a cheap shot. Because basically, if you own a pickup truck, one way or another, you're going to have a bed liner in it. It's going to be a spray-on, or you're going to buy one of those plastic ones to put in there, or the factory installs one. And a bed liner, which most pickup truck owners would have prevented the kind of damage that Chevrolet showed in its comparison ad, where it showed, you know, for instance, landscaping blocks being dumped into an F-150, punctured the F-150 bed, didn't do it in the Silverado. Or they showed a toolbox being knocked off the edge of the bed into the F-150. Oops, really bad dent there. Didn't happen in the Silverado. So I think that's what may have opened a new chapter here, is that Ford sees this as a cheap shot, not a real accurate representation of how pickup trucks are actually used. And the other thing is, this is going to be a long-running battle in pickup trucks, as it has been. And right now, Silverado sales are flat, while the Ford F-150, as I mentioned, is ahead of last year with this all-aluminum bed. And, you know, there's no underestimating the intensity of that particular rivalry here in Detroit between Ford and GM. And, you know, we've already seen some commentary saying, well, this is open a can of worms. Who knows what Ford is going to do in response. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Well, as somebody like you who's really an expert in branding, and you've known a lot of this and seen a lot of this over the years, this is something that companies have to be very, very careful with, because if they say something that's not true, is that something that they're going to be, you know, watching very closely? Or are they going to be fine picking, you know, going over these ads with fine-tooth combs if this is what we're going to see from here on out?
Well, you know, of course, advertising always stretches the boundaries of truth to some extent. And literally, when you look at when you see a video or when you see the TV ad that GM has put out for the Silverado, they show the test, and what happened was true in the sense of, yeah, that's exactly how it happened. And Ford isn't even disputing that. But what's not true really is if you're a pickup truck owner, you kind of know that, well, they cheated a little bit on the test in the sense that I'm going to have a bed liner there and that's going to prevent the damage. And what that leaves is an underlying impression that, you know, maybe there really is a question about the durability of this aluminum bed in the new F-150, which is, you know, just crucial to its identity right now. So it definitely leaves some lingering doubts, you know, hurts the brand in that sense. And so that's why it'll be interesting to see how Ford responds.
And on the flip side of this, those bed liners, if you get a nice one, they can be really expensive. If this is something that would prevent you from not having to get one of those, if you're a small business owner, that might be a positive.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you might look and say, well, if I get a Silverado, maybe I really don't need a bed liner. Yeah, a positive, I guess. But, you know, if you're spending $40,000, $50,000 is possible on a medium-duty pickup truck, you're probably going to do the extra few hundred dollars for the bed liner, especially when it's an essential tool for your business.
I thought of you earlier this month, and part of last month, we saw the auto sales figures out, and it was not good. There was some of the car makers were extremely low, as much as 12% their sales dropped off at a time when people should be buying cars. What's going on?
Well, the car industry has had a great long run, one of the longest, I think perhaps the longest in its history in terms of that cycle of recovery and surge and leveling off, because since the bottom of the Great Recession in 2008, sales have just kept advancing, you know, 9, 10, 11% a year. The car industry is essentially still cyclical. And so everybody's been anticipating that at some point things would level off. And in fact, sales have leveled off this year at a record level of around 17.5 million a year. That's a really, really good run for the industry. It certainly has helped the U.S. economy recover to the extent it has. But now we are definitely entering an era where things are leveling off. Car dealers are having to offer more incentives. It's going to get really even more interesting than it has been in terms of the competition among the automakers.
Is it a harbinger of things to come with the larger economy? If people stop buying cars, does that mean we're going to see potential ripple effects in other areas as well?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no bigger aspect of the economy still in the U.S., except maybe for digital technology generally, than the auto industry. So if the auto industry levels off, that's going to be one major engine of the U.S. economy that's not going to be operating on all cylinders, pardon the pun. So that is going to be problematic. And if you look at how the economy overall has struggled to attain momentum, even with the auto industry operating, you know, very robustly, I think that does indicate some potential for softness ahead.
Well, and let me add a spark plug, pardon the pun again, to our conversation.
All right, good one.
Yeah. Is this potentially going to spark some sales, do you think? Are car companies going to maybe offer some more incentives to bring people into the showrooms?
Absolutely. The level of incentives already has been creeping up over the last year or so. And then particularly in certain segments, like luxury auto sales have taken a little bit more of a hit than the general market. So consumers could certainly look there for some better deals, especially as we near the, you know, sort of the traditional summer clear out of old models. And if you want a sedan, especially if you want a high mileage, small car, now is really the time to buy, because sales of sedans have just fallen off the cliff as consumers favor SUVs and crossovers and a little bit larger vehicles.
I always forget, is it July or August that's the best month to buy a car?
July, because you still got some selection. By the time you get to August, the cupboard's pretty bare. And that traditional calendar doesn't hold as true as it once did, because the companies are introducing cars throughout the year. But it still holds pretty true that July is a really good month to buy a car.
Dale Buss is a writer for Forbes. He's written a great article this month about the competition between Chevrolet and Ford over the F-150 and advertising. Dale D. Buss at Twitter. You can find his work also at Fortune.com or Forbes.com. We'll also link you to some of the photos and some of the info on this. Dale, good to talk with you again on the Opening Bell.
All right. Thank you.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:38. Welcome back to the Opening Bell. School is getting ready to end for the year for Chicago Public School students. It's out for some students already across the country and other parts of Illinois, and it is teachers have a rough job. If you have teachers in your family or your friends with teachers or maybe married to one, you know what they go through. There's a lot of work involved, and thankfully there's technology and startups like the Grade Network who've stepped forward to help teachers. The startup two Northwestern University startups, the Grade Network and Surgenet, tied for first place in the 8th Annual Northwestern University Venture Challenge Finals that were held earlier this month, and each winner went home with $20,000. We're joined this morning by the CEO of the Grade Network, Blair Pearson. Blair, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on the award.
Thank you. We're thrilled.
This is the Grade Network. Tell us what Grade Network is.
Sure. The Grade Network essentially connects middle school and high school teachers to qualified teaching assistants, who we call graders, to help grade and provide more individualized feedback to students faster. So our graders are all aspiring teachers and come from undergraduate colleges of education across the country, and they help teachers provide feedback to students.
This is probably one of the big, again, if you know a teacher, have one in your family, you sit and watch them on the couch grading every night, and you're like, are you really going to pay any attention to me tonight? Or, you know, are you just going to do this all night long and be a teacher? This is a huge help for teachers, is it not?
Absolutely. Yeah, we, the Grade Network was actually partly inspired by my research covering education, and then I teamed up with a former classroom teacher who absolutely lived through that pain and frustration of just simply not having the time or resources to provide the kind of timely feedback that he really wanted to his students. And that kind of feedback, research shows, is absolutely critical to improving learning outcomes. So we started talking to hundreds of teachers and principals and realized that that was indeed a huge and pervasive feeling that teachers have.
Because the idea is when a teacher is so overwhelmed and tired and going through grading, the kinds of feedback that you would expect as a student to see, notes, maybe ideas about things, that kind of fades off as the teacher gets about halfway through the stack of 50, right?
Yeah, it can happen in various ways. It's just it's hard to, you know, if an average essay would take a teacher, you know, even just 10 minutes to review, grade, and provide feedback, that's a 20-hour project that the teacher is trying to do on their Saturday or Sunday. And it is hard to manage that kind of load off hours all the time. And then teachers are really should be basically operating, we took a term from healthcare, at the top of their license. And so essentially teachers should be focused on the things that they're most qualified to do. And a lot of the working through that grading is something that they can get help with. And then they can come in and spend a fraction of the time reviewing, adding comments, working directly with students to interpret all of the feedback and do what they can do best, which is work directly with students.
And so I know your phone is going to start ringing off the hook after some teachers hear this, because they're going to say, how do I get one of these great assistants? Is it, do they pay for it? Is this something that the school district is going to say, no, we're not going to give you the money? Or is this something that's part of you, the graduate student's education?
So it is, we partner with schools, and schools fund this for their teachers. And so we've been being up and running over the last school year, and we're absolutely excited to be expanding our group of teachers that are on the platform for the coming school year. So hopefully they do check us out online and start the sign-up process so we can get them on the list for next year.
How are the teachers that are part of the grade, or the assistants that are part of the Grade Network, different from, let's say, you know, an intern or another assistant that the school district might bring in?
Yeah, so the graders are very similar to what like a student teacher might do in their senior year. So these undergraduate college education students are on their path to becoming teachers and have had various training and pedagogy, and they're starting to get exposure to the classroom, observing classrooms. And this is really a way for them to start to engage directly with a veteran teacher and to gain exposure to real student work, see learning patterns emerge, and begin to kind of apply their own thinking cap as a teacher to providing these types of comments. The teachers also work really closely with graders to provide provide feedback back to the graders on how they're doing and provide coaching. So it is very much like an apprenticeship model.
And there has to be, I guess, a level of trust and a real open communication between the two to allow the teacher to give that person trust in making comments on papers and stuff, right?
Yes. So we are hugely focused on ensuring like the quality of the feedback and building up that relationship of trust between teacher and grader. And that happens in a number of different ways. The graders go through an interview and application process with us and training program. Teachers can also provide their own training to their graders to be specific to what they want. And teachers provide very detailed instructions and rubrics to help their graders be able to provide accurate and consistent grades and feedback to students. And then they evaluate them afterwards as well.
Teachers these days feel like they're under attack from so many different levels, and that they are underappreciated. I don't think anybody really would argue with that when it comes down to it. Underpaid probably as well. How does this help the graduate students get into the mode of becoming a teacher and preparing them for what they're going to face as soon as they hit their own classroom.
Absolutely. So we're so focused on appreciating teachers and things that's a tone that has to change in our society. And so what we try to do every day with how we interact with both teachers and future teachers is celebrate them, encourage them, which we do by celebrating graders of the month on our blog and really just allowing these future teachers to see and be appreciated for the impact that they're having directly on students in a really positive way. We just believe that our education system deserves this and deserves our time and attention and kind of if not us working on it, then who? So we're excited that there are many new higher quality products and technologies coming to education. And I think it'll be a very exciting next couple decades for education.
Student teaching is one of those areas where the kids find out pretty quickly whether or not it's something they want to do full time. What is the absentee rate of not necessarily the absentee rate, but the quit rate here? Do you see a lot of student teachers say, no, I'm not going to do this? Or do they really just hunker down and say, okay, this is what I'm in for, I'm ready for it?
So we haven't seen that yet with our graders, but we know that is a big problem that colleges of education can face is sometimes their students make it through the whole 4 years and then they're ready to graduate and they're actually not sure that they want to become a teacher because they didn't actually have teaching experience until the end of their program. And so this, we hope will give them a taste a little bit earlier of what's going to be demanded of them to be a teacher. But we also think that that they're going to feel much better prepared, which research shows does make a huge impact on their first year in the classroom. And teachers have such a high turnover rate in those kind of years 1 through 5 that if whatever we can do to help better prepare teachers for that experience, we hope we'll be able to keep them as mission focused and driven as they are in college and how passionately they feel about becoming teachers.
How is technology incorporated into the grade network? Do the teachers and graders communicate with technology? Is there some sort of app or something?
Yes. So the whole relationship is remote and online. And so all the student work is often already digital, whether that's in word processing or often stored in Google Drive or Dropbox or is synced directly into our platform. And then the graders are using our grading tools and software within our web application. They're messaging with the teachers through our web application. And we have a lot of exciting plans on the product roadmap to make it even more effective for graders and for teachers.
This, as we move forward into the summer, is an important time for directing to students here about not forgetting what they've learned over the past year. How are you helping teachers be able to focus more on that, getting that message to students instead of grading final papers?
Oh, that's such an excellent question, and I wish we could be even more involved in preventing summer learning loss. We are looking into helping a number of summer school organizations, but essentially we just are on the same page with teachers, encouraging students to engage over the summer, read books. It's kind of the message. We try to help highlight some summer programs that our graders can also get involved in because many of them are looking for opportunities to continue developing their skills in the profession this summer, and oftentimes that's lacking. So we try to highlight opportunities for graders as well to find summer learning opportunities.
Blair Pearson is the CEO of the Grade Network. Congratulations again, Blair, on your award, and good luck moving forward. Thanks for being with us in the opening bell.
Thank you so much, Steve.
You can find the Grade Network at the Grade Network, GRAIDE Network, and online as well at gradenetwork.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:52 on the WGN Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are positive, about 45 points in the positive, suggesting an opening that will be higher on Wall Street a little later on this morning. S&P NASDAQ also higher this morning. Let's get the latest on commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Livestock trade yesterday, the cash hog market in the Midwest, well, they were steady to a half dollar higher. Some packers struggling to fill their inventories for the rest of the week. An Iowa dealer said, "We need a couple of loads of hogs for this week. We're not sure where we're going to find pigs for next week. And in Illinois, hog prices steady in the country, $55 top. Turning to futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, hog futures there settled higher. Summer hog contracts hitting new highs with concerns over hot weather that could cut production and slow down delivery of hogs to market. Now, live cattle futures closed mostly higher Tuesday, driven by short covering after contracts settled down the $3 limit on Monday. June live cattle closed down 40 cents, and August live cattle ended the day 65 cents higher. Turning to the grain trade, at the Chicago Board of Trade yesterday, corn futures up 1.5%, rallying from some early weakness. Again, weather concerns, heat and dry weather, particularly in the eastern corn belt, a concern. Soybean futures were mixed, and of course, wheat futures still struggling with increased harvest in this country and heavy global supplies. A reminder, coming up this Saturday, Grendel Farm near Hampshire, Illinois. The June Dairy Month Breakfast on the Farm. Be there between 6 a.m. and 11 a.m. And you'll meet Steve and Johnny. You'll meet Steve Alexander. You'll meet me. Look forward to seeing you. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Again, just a reminder, what we'll be watching as we move through the day ahead from a business and economic standpoint, Federal Reserve is wrapping up its two-day meeting to set interest rates. A statement and economic forecast from the central bank expected at about 1 o'clock Chicago time. They're generally running on like clockwork, usually about 10 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. We will, of course, have that for you right here on WGN. Federal Reserve Industrial Production for May report released today. The Labor Department is going to release the Producer Price Index, and the Treasury Department releases its report on foreign holdings.